for that year by the National Council of Black Studies. He is the co-editor of the Black Power Encyclopedia. He is editor of a special issue of the Journal of the Black Scholar on the legacy of the Honorable Chukwe Lumumba. So he is an activist scholar, and we are very proud to present Dr. Umoja today, who may be showing slides, but who will definitely be speaking on Give Peace a Chance, the situation in Nicaragua. Let's welcome Dr. Umoja.
Thank you. Name of our mothers, fathers, all our ancestors, I greet you this morning. And one of the affiliations I also have is I'm a member and co-founder of the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement. And some of my comrades are here from Malcolm X Grassroots Movement. We always begin any of our presentations with a slogan, free the land.
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 By any means necessary, Ashe. And I want to also introduce my wife, Aminata, who's here. Yeah. Who's the co-founder of Quilombo Academic and Cultural Institute, the national organizer of Malcolm X Grassroots Movement. Taliba Abuya is here with her daughter, Nugget. And Brother Zafir was one of our members also. Brother Zaire, excuse me, one of our members. I also want to thank Professor Linda Bell, who invited me, but also at when I came to Georgia State, I came in 1996, and she was one of our department, African American Studies, was started in 1994 after some student activism, and also the support of several socially conscious faculty members and administrators, and one of those was Linda Bell. So I always want to acknowledge her activism and collegiality, and also like to thank the rest of the program committee that invited me here today. Just want to make one comment before I start. Oftentimes, I didn't realize this was where I was coming today. I knew the congregation, knew of the congregation, but I always pass down the street and I see that Black Lives Matter sign. Y'all know how that makes me feel? You know, that I know that there's some solidarity. So I want to applaud this congregation for showing your solidarity with a community that's, you know, facing genocide. So I just want to salute you for that. I salute you for welcoming me in this space. So the title of my presentation is Give Peace a Chance, Venezuela and the Continuation of Monroe Doctrine in the 21st Century. I'm gonna come back to that in a second, but I mentioned I was with Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, and I remember Malcolm X once saying that it was important for us, and I'm paraphrasing right now, and I like to apologize that I don't have the slides. We couldn't get the technology together, but you should know you gotta be prepared even if you don't have the technology, right?
Right.
I've been in the game a little while. But Malcolm X once talked about how you have to think critically, because people will have you thinking that your friends are your enemies and your enemies are your friends. When he says people have you thinking that, he's talking about particularly the corporate media. You know, we watch the media all the time, right? And it'll have us thinking one way when maybe our sentiments, you know, should be with somebody else. Last week, in fact, and it's interesting how things work sometimes, we had prepared to have this conversation months ago. And then just last week, last Saturday, we saw an attempted assassination attempt on President Maduro of Venezuela. And so I thought it was timely. And to really understand the context of why would there be an assassination attempt, and where does that all fit in? Of course, the news said, well, the United States government had nothing to do with it. Okay, had nothing to do with it. But We want to put some of those things in context this morning. Monroe Doctrine, most of you were probably educated in American schools like I was, right? And we were taught about the Monroe Doctrine, 1823. It was ostensibly to keep, in the 19th century, European foreign powers out of the Western Hemisphere, and for the United States really to have dominion over the Western Hemisphere. Now, as it turns out, it wasn't just designed for France and England and other imperial powers during that time, but historically, the way it's played out is the Western Hemisphere, and you know the quote, has been seen as the United States' backyard, right? And so any interest that has emerged that wasn't consistent with U.S. foreign policy has become a threat and has been attacked by United States military, economically, and any other means they could use to disrupt, destabilize any other regime that wasn't under their control. It's not, you know, we were taught when we were in school, it was about democracy, right? But then sometimes when we look a little bit closer, we see that this whole principle of democracy, which is supposed to be people governing themselves, is not what it's about in terms of this particular foreign policy. I'll give you one case in point. In 1915, in Haiti, the Haitian people had developed a government that the United States didn't see in their interests. So in 1915, Haiti was invaded by the United States, and it occupied Haiti until 1934. I could say more on that, but we're going to move on. 1954, the year I was born, in Guatemala. Guatemala elected a government that the United States didn't see in its interests, led by a man by the last name of Arbenz. That government was overthrown with CIA support. Okay. Of course, we all know about Cuba, right? 59, excuse me, you had the Cuban Revolution. And then not only was there the Bay of Pigs, you know about the invasion that was attempted in 1961 with anti-Castro Cubans, but also there were several attempts of assassination on the life of Fidel Castro. Several unsuccessful attempts to assassinate Fidel Castro. Okay, then you have in 1973, Chile, Allende, right? A socialist who was elected by his people, free and fair election, but the United States supported a military coup by a general by the name of Pinochet, and where Allende was assassinated, okay? Go back to Haiti. For the first time after the elimination of a dictator, Haitian people have free and fair elections, 1991, and they elect a Catholic priest who was committed to liberation theology, Jean Bertrand Berch Aristide. In 1991, he was overthrown. Not overthrown, I shouldn't say overthrown. There was a military coup. Overthrown kind of gives you like it was a revolution. No, it was a military coup supported by George Herbert Bush. And then after Aristide comes back, he's allowed to go participate in election again, 2000, has over 92% of the vote, because most of Haiti is poor and poor people voted for him, right? And after Aristide was reelected in 2004, there's another coup, and he was forced, taken by special forces, U.S. special forces, and taken to Africa, to Central African Republic. There's more I could say on that. We could do a whole lecture on Haiti in and of itself. And Haiti is still in crisis today. So how does this connect to Venezuela? Venezuela, as you all know, and I know most Americans are geographically challenged, but it's in the Western Hemisphere also, right? And Venezuela has the largest oil reserves in the world. Largest oil reserves in the world. In 1992, they elected a former military person. He attempted to take power through a coup, but was unsuccessful. But he was so popular that they had to release him from prison. And I thought that was amazing that you have a political prisoner, and because there was so much popular support for him, people supported the aims of the coup he attempted to do in 1989, that he was released. And he ran for president and was elected. His policies were seen as maybe a threat to, and when I say U.S. interests, I'm not talking about the interests of folk in this room, right? I'm talking about the people who run things. You know, I'm talking about the elites who control the economy. I'm talking about the elites who control the politics of this country, right? Nobody in this room. If not, y'all need to put more in the collection plate if you had those type of resources, right? But we're not talking about anybody in this room. We're talking about the people who run and control the government, who control the economy of this country, right? Okay, so Hugo Chavez's interests were seen in opposition to people who run and control this country, and we'll talk about those in a second. In 1992, there was an attempted military coup on Hugo Chavez, but soldiers who were loyal to him saved him and were able to maintain his government. What were some of the things that his government did that were seen to be in opposition to the people who ran and control this society? Well, number one, they took control of the oil reserves, right? And he said the oil reserves would not go for foreign interests, would be primarily used for the benefit of Venezuelan people. So, and who does that affect? It affects the literacy of the poor, right? It affects income of the poor, particularly also when we say the poor, much of the poor in Venezuela are indigenous people, much of the poor in Venezuela are people of African descent who are descendants of the Middle Passage, right? So it had impact on those populations in particular. Some populations saw these resources were being taken from them, particularly the wealthy and elite in Venezuela, okay? So it affects the people inside of Venezuela, but it also affects other Latin American countries, because many Latin American countries aligned themselves with Venezuela, and there was an attempt by Venezuela to create a new economic order relating to other Latin American countries so they wouldn't be as dependent on the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and particularly United States and Canadian interests. Another element of Venezuela's foreign policy was what they call South-to-South relations, where they reached out to African countries and began to have economic relations with countries on the continent of Africa, again, to lessen dependency on World Bank, International Monetary Fund, and also European and United States economic interests. So those type of maneuvers and things by Venezuela were seen to be a threat, and so Chavez became a threat. And the United States began to implement means, not only the military coup of 1999, but they began to implement support for Venezuelan opposition, as well as ultimately sanctions. Sanctions initially, and first sanctions actually occurred under President Obama. They were seen to be kind of benign, because the first level of sanctions were sanctions that were going to be that were issued basically against Venezuelans who had assets in U.S. banks. And if you weren't wealthy, it really didn't impact you, right? How many poor Venezuelans had some assets in Bank of America or Wells Fargo? Not many, right? So that really didn't have much impact. But it began to escalate. And some of the escalation, and particularly support of opposition, led to violence in the streets. Because we know, as we've seen in other countries, oftentimes the stabilization happens in a way of creating a crisis by supporting violent elements of right-wing forces. In Venezuela, it was very dangerous because in the demonstrations done by the right wing, over 26 people were actually burned in the street. When I say burned, gasoline was poured on them. And typically, many of the people who were burned actually were people of African descent. So it kind of, for me personally, to digress a little bit, it had a particular element when I see Black Lives Matter. It kind of related to this whole history I know of lynching and burning and things of that nature. But that was one of the things that occurred, which created a crisis in the country. Crisis, as you know, in a political crisis lead to capital leaving the country because people feel their investments aren't safe. So that began to affect the economy even more. Another thing that occurred was due to this crisis that occurred, the Venezuelan government and the opposition, the Venezuelan government actually called for negotiations with the opposition, and they were to meet in Dominican Republic. They met in Dominican Republic and they agreed upon elections that would take place this year. But the Trump administration and Pence convinced some of the opposition not to participate in the elections. But the question I ask, if you don't participate in peaceful elections and you call for a regime change, what are you saying? What are you saying? You're not looking for a peaceful solution. Then we see this assassination attempt last week, right? Okay, if you don't participate in elections, elections occurred, and I want to point out that President Jimmy Carter, who observed elections, he said he observed 92 different elections across the globe. And he said the best process he saw was in Venezuela. This is what Jimmy Carter said in 2012. He said the best election process that he observed was in Venezuela. They have international observers. It would be like us in the United States having elections and then bringing in Venezuela and Mexico and African countries to observe it and make sure it's fair. Maybe some stuff wouldn't have happened if they had that, right? To observe the elections, but they bring in outside observers to see how fair their elections are. And they're not all in the Capitol. Deborah Jackson, who was the mayor of Lithonia, was one of the observers in the last elections that took place in May. Okay, and so they're considered some of the fairest in the world. And again, if the elections are fair, why wouldn't you want to participate in them? Why wouldn't you want to participate in them unless you knew, well, look, I don't represent the majority of the people, so I don't want to participate in these elections. And so how can change occur? It can only happen through coercive means. And I want you to keep in mind that peaceful means and warfare doesn't just occur through me shooting a gun or having a bomb. Warfare also can occur on an economic level. Warfare can also occur on an economic level. So if I deprive you of food, that's violence. If I provide you prevent you from getting medicine, that's violence. Okay, and so this is what we see, particularly after the elections that occurred this year. Trump increased the level of sanctions. So certain food products, certain other medicine and other supplies are prevented from getting to Venezuelan people. Okay, so warfare has been declared on Venezuela. by the United States, by Canada, by other countries, right? And it's preventing the population of these things. And I had the opportunity to go to Venezuela twice this year. And one of the things I saw in one small community of predominantly Afro-Venezuelans, they began to try to resist in their own way. So to resist the lack of products, they created their own Pampers. To resist that, they developed through local products their own detergent so they could wash their clothes and wash their dishes. But that's what they're doing. What in the last few months, I became part of a campaign of people in the United States and Canada. Thank you, I'm not. In the United States and Canada tried to oppose the sanctions because just as I was involved in a movement around anti-apartheid, the people in South Africa resisted, but they got international support from the rest of us to get Nelson Mandela and others free, right? This song, Give a Piece a Chance, I know many of you might remember, you see some people in my age cohort and even older, remember when we did stuff around Vietnam, around to get rid of United States involvement in Vietnam. So international support is important. And so one of the things we're asking folk to do is to write your congressman. I know many of us in this room, we probably either have John Lewis or Hank Johnson as our congressman. Hank Johnson has actually spoken out in support of this issue in the past, but you know, sometimes it's important we let people know that their constituency still supports this issue too, because you know they have corporate issues telling them something else, right? And so write your congressman, if any of you, if we can get your information and we can circulate it through, send you information, you can circulate through social media, just to provide an alternative way of thinking for people to think about. And there are several other things that people can do that you can see that are listed on the sheet that we can do to try to support the people of Venezuela and as well as to give peace a chance. And so war does not continue in our names. I want to thank you again for bringing me here this Sunday. I apologize I don't have the images. Maybe I could come back at another time, but if I come back, I might come on another issue. But I want to thank you for bringing me here today, and I want to encourage you to continue what you're doing here in your community, in this congregation. Thanks a lot, and free the land.
Free the land.
Free the land. Free the land. By any means necessary. Ashe.
Okay.